Hello, and welcome to Historically Speaking, Uncommon History with an Unconventional Pair. I'm Rebecca Robbins.
And I'm Kim Kimmel.
I'm a singer and actress.
And I'm a retired history teacher.
He was my history teacher in college.
And now we've been married for 21 years.
Sometimes quirky, sometimes obscure.
But this is the kind of history you actually want to remember.
Hello, and welcome to episode 31 of Historically Speaking Podcast.
Yes, we've done 31. We're about to do our 31st episode.
Here we go. And it's October, so we thought, what better way to start out October than with something a little scary and
macabre.
Very macabre. And quite frankly, disgusting. But
yes.
So today's episode
is about Jack the Ripper.
I was going to call him Frank for some reason. I don't know why. That just came in my
Ripper.
Head. Doesn't quite have the same ring.
No, not quite.
Yeah. So you've become quite a ripperologist.
Yes, there's an entire field of study called ripperology. Can you believe it?
Yeah, and I think you now have that title as a ripperologist.
It's a huge bibliography on this. And Jack the Ripper remains arguably the most notorious uncaught murderer in history.
In history?
Right.
That's mind-blowing.
Yes.
Especially with today's modern forensics.
Didn't have those modern forensics at that time.
Like, but a lot of times you can go back now.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. In fact, some have used DNA evidence to try to pinpoint who Jack the Ripper really was. There are over 100 suspects.
Still.
Yeah. There were over 100 suspects. Some of them are very famous, the heir to the throne, Prince Albert. Winston Churchill's father, Lewis Carroll.
Some of them sound a little ridiculous.
Right. I think we can dismiss those. There are some kind of wacky proposals, but there are some that are very seriously proposed as Jack the Ripper, and it has merit, but there's always never enough evidence as to who Jack the Ripper was. And so I think you can say the one certain thing about Jack the Ripper is that there is no certainty about who Jack the Ripper was. It remains a cold case to this day.
Wow. Well, let's set the stage.
All right.
So we're in London.
We're in London in 1888. Now, the Jack the Ripper murders are usually put down to 5 gruesome murders that occurred between August 31st and November 9th of 1888. But they have to be seen in a larger context of the Whitechapel murders. Whitechapel was a district of London in the East End, and it was a rather slum-like area, a low-class area. A lot of immigrants had come in there. It was not in any way a plush area of London.
No, it was kind of like the Lower East Side of Manhattan
at the same time. That's a good analogy. The Whitechapel murders included 11 murders.
Total.
Between April of 1888 and February of 1891. Now, of those 11, generally, ripperologists will say 5 of those 11 were done by Jack the Ripper because they were so gruesome, with one exception, which we'll get to.
Okay.
And there might be a reason for that exception. The first 2 murders, one occurred in April of 1888, and the other occurred on August 7th of 1888, are not ordinarily attributed to Jack the Ripper. And then there are the 5 that are.
Okay, let's start with those.
And then the 4 after that are not attributed to him. All right, we start with the 5 that are. The first of the 5 unfortunate victims was a woman named Mary Ann Nichols.
Okay, what do we know about Mary Ann?
Well, all 5 of Jack the Ripper's victims were prostitutes. They did other work, but they were prostitutes. They functioned in the Whitechapel area. And which, by the way, now is the borough, part of the borough of Tower Hamlets, but that only came into existence in 1965 when Middlesex County was done away with. In any case, Mary Ann Nichols was found on August 31st, brutally murdered.
Where?
She was found in a street in Whitechapel, and 4 of the 5 murders attributed to Jack the Ripper, they would be found outside on a street. The last one would be found indoors. And Mary Ann Nichols, people came across, they'd seen her earlier that night. It seems that in all 5 cases, people earlier, hours before they were killed, people had seen them. oftentimes seen them with a gentleman or more than one gentleman. But there's never any hard evidence as to who that was. Descriptions varied, etc. Marianne Nichols was brutally murdered, stabbed many times, and she is considered the first of the five main victims of Jack the Ripper.
So was she just stabbed? She was, her throat was slashed.
Yes, and her abdomen was slashed and so on. She was not as brutally mutilated as later Ripper victims would be.
So it keeps getting worse with each murder.
Now, there had been two previous murders, which I had mentioned, but once Marianne Nichols was found dead and brutalized, they brought in the central portion of Scotland Yard to investigate rather than just the local police division there.
Now, why do you think that is?
Well, it was such a sensational murder. And so they brought in a few individuals from the central portion of Scotland Yard, the Metropolitan Police, and one of them was Chief Inspector Fred Aberline, who Michael Caine plays in the 1988 version of Jack the Ripper.
TV movie version.
Right. Aberline had moved up through the police for many years. He had started very low, became a sergeant, became everything up the whole way to a chief inspector. And in his earlier years, he had patrolled Whitechapel. So he was sent into the Whitechapel area because he knew it so well.
I see.
So he's coming from Scotland Yard with others to investigate this. Well, on September 8th, the second murder occurred.
So what's the time?
August 31st was Marianne Nichols.
Oh, okay. And then September 8th.
September 8th. So we're talking a little bit more than a week. And this one was a brutal killing. This was the killing of Annie Chapman. Annie Chapman was disemboweled. Her intestines were placed up upon her shoulder. She was slashed in many areas. She was mutilated. As horrible as the Marianne Nichols murder was, this was more horrible. After the September 8th...
So we think these all just happened on the street?
Yep, pretty much. I mean, these were prostitutes that would pick up men, usually late at night. At least some of them would be.
But it's amazing that nobody heard anything or saw anything.
Well, that's always, you know, somebody hears one thing, somebody hears another, somebody sees this man with a prostitute, someone sees another. Sometimes the evidence is conflicting. Yeah, I can never really pin it down, no. This was Annie Chapman. She was brutalized. After the second murder on September 8th, a group of local businessmen who were tradesmen formed what was called the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee. This was headed by a man named George Lusk, who was a builder. They wanted to do their bit in order to try to find out who this killer was.
Well, sure. I mean, it's right in their neighborhood.
Yeah. And so this committee was formed, about 15 or 16 or 17 in this committee.
Were they mostly businessmen in the area?
Yeah, they were tradesmen.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And what happened was, in late September, and specifically on September 27th, the Central News Agency received a letter. Now, keep in mind, Scotland Yard and others were getting all kinds of letters. Some were helpful letters. This is how you can find this person. Others,
so it was like the 1-800 tip line.
Yeah, something like that for 1888.
Right.
But on September 27th, Central News Agency received a letter that was addressed to Dear Boss. And it bragged about killings that had occurred. And it was signed Jack the Ripper.
That's where we got the name.
That's where we got the name. Before this, he went by different names, but Jack the Ripper stuck. The Central News Agency turned it over to Scotland Yard 2 days later on September 29th. And it was grammatically correct and all that. The spelling was fine. And then what happened was, on September 30th, just a day or two after they received this, where they received the letter on the 27th, turned it over to Scotland Yard on the 29th, on the 30th of September, there was a double murder. The first murder was of Elizabeth Stride. Now, what's interesting about Elizabeth Stride, and she had been tipsy earlier that evening and so on, and she was a prostitute. She was an immigrant from Sweden, and she lived in the Whitechapel area. Unlike Marianne Nichols and Annie Chapman, though, only her throat was cut.
I see.
There was no mutilation. Okay. Now, she would have died rather instantly,
very quickly. The other two's throats were slashed.
Yes, that's correct.
So most of them, hopefully, were not.
Hopefully, they died very quickly, yes. And I think they may have.
I hope.
That would be a mercy.
Yeah.
But Elizabeth Stride wasn't mutilated. Now, there's different theories about this. One of the theories is that this Jack the Ripper is responsible for this murder, but somehow he was interrupted and had to leave the scene of the crime quickly before he could mutilate her. Others maintain, no, Elizabeth Stride was not killed by the Ripper. The majority, though, think that Elizabeth Stride was one of the Ripper's victims.
Okay.
Well, that very same night, the fourth victim was killed.
Wasn't it within hours? Or
oh, yeah.
It was an hour?
It was a matter of an hour, or 45 minutes, an hour, or something like that. This was Catherine Eddowes. Catherine Eddowes actually was found, Stride was found in Whitechapel. Eddowes was actually found in the city of London, right next to Whitechapel. And she was horribly mutilated.
Was this the worst so far?
I would say this was probably the worst so far. In the Annie Chapman murder, in addition to other mutilations, her uterus was removed. In this particular murder, among other mutilations, Catherine Eddowes' uterus was removed. And
this guy did not like women.
Oh, I think we're talking about a misogynist here. What's interesting is there has been the proposal that the killer was a woman, like a midwife, who would have a certain medical knowledge.
Yeah, because how would you know? I wouldn't even know. If I had to cut somebody open and find their uterus, I wouldn't have a clue where it was.
Well, this is one of the many puzzles about Jack the Ripper and where you have differences. I mean, there were many doctors that examined these corpses, and they came to different conclusions. For instance, one of the doctors was Dr. Gordon Brown, and he opined that the Ripper had medical knowledge. But another doctor who examined these corpses, Dr. Thomas Bond, said, no, he didn't have medical knowledge. So even doctors disagreed as to whether Jack the Ripper had some kind of medical knowledge.
I mean, that's so specific, though, to be able to open somebody up and go right for their uterus.
But the fact that doctors disagreed on whether he had knowledge or not of anatomy and had some kind of surgical skill is, I think, itself interesting. Well, by this time, you have four victims, Marianne Nichols, Annie Chapman.
Okay, I don't think we finished with the fourth one yet.
Well, Elizabeth Stride and Catherine Eddowes.
Catherine Eddowes, I don't think we finished. Right. She was found in London.
Catherine Eddowes was actually found in Mitre Square in the city of London, close to Whitechapel. But what's interesting about Catherine Eddowes is a portion of her clothing was found in Whitechapel, and it was identified as her clothing. And right above the clothing on this street, Goulston Street, there was a statement that said, "The Jews are the men that are not blamed for nothing." And Jews was spelled incorrectly, J-U-W-E-S. Now, why this was so concerning to Scotland Yard and to Scotland Yard's police commissioner and others was because a lot of Jews had moved into the Whitechapel area from Eastern Europe and elsewhere, and Scotland Yard understandably was concerned about anti-Semitism and the Jews could be used as a scapegoat and so on. So they copied this statement, but then they erased it.
I see. So no one could.
Sir Charles Warren was the commissioner at the time of Scotland Yard. And he ordered it to be erased after it was copied.
Now, I just have a question. You may not know the answer, but when they found her clothing there at that
piece of
scene,
her clothing. Mm-hmm.
Was it bloodied? I mean,
yes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right. And they identified it as hers.
So he had taken it probably from her body, or she was murdered there and moved to London?
I think she was murdered. I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, that's all part of the mystery of that. I think she was murdered in Mitre Square in London. But somehow her clothing ended up a portion of this. And then that statement, which of course is deeply anti-Semitic, appeared. And that was whitewashed. That was taken off. But because they didn't want anti-Semitic riots.
All right. Oh, yeah. You don't need that on top of all of these murders happening.
No. That was another concern by Scotland Yard. You got a lot of detectives looking for this guy, as well as the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee.
Well, and then it's all in the papers probably every day.
Oh, my gosh. It reached the United States. I mean, it was worldwide by this time. It was sensational. Absolutely. This was an intense hunt for this individual.
But, you know, at this point, I would think even if I was a prostitute, I would not go out late at night without someone else with me.
Well, they did kind of band together. A number of the prostitutes carried some kind of weapon, a knife or something like that. Yes, there was some attempt to protect themselves.
Because that would be terrifying.
Oh, it would be. But, you know, Whitechapel was an area of tens and tens and tens of thousands of people with all kind of crooked little streets, et cetera. So, yes, there was absolutely general fear that existed all over the place. On October 1st, the day after the double murder, on September 30th, a postcard was received by the Central News Agency, and it was in the same handwriting as the Dear Boss letter.
Which was the first letter.
Right. And it was not signed. It was signed Saucy Jack, not Jack the Ripper.
Saucy Jack?
Yeah, it was signed Saucy Jack.
What the hell does that mean?
And it made references to the first letter, so it showed that there was a connection there. Now, there were some people who have studied Jack the Ripper that think that both of these, the initial letter and then the postcard, were not written by the killer, that they were written by some journalist in order to increase circulation of the newspaper.
And it certainly would.
Right. So there is that theory that this was not written by the killer. But now the plot thickens even more. George Lusk, who was the head of this Whitechapel Vigilance Committee, the builder I mentioned.
Right.
On October 16th, he received a package in the mail. And the package contained half a kidney.
Oh.
And the letter, which was, it was entitled From Hell. That was the title, From Hell.
That was the title or that was
the title
he signed
at the top of it. It was signed, Catch Me If You Can, or something to that effect. That's how it was signed. And it talked about how it ate the other half of the kidney.
Oh, my gosh.
And what was interesting is in the Catherine Eddowes murder, part of her ear was cut off. And in the September 27th letter, the first one received, that was signed Jack the Ripper, there was a mention of how an ear would be cut off. So, you see, it all starts to come together, but you can't really figure out who is who. Now, what's interesting about the October 16th package that George Lusk got, which included this half a kidney, we don't know if it was Catherine Eddowes' kidney or not. It could have been. We're not certain. It was a human kidney. What's interesting about this particular letter that came with the package is, unlike the Dear Boss letter and unlike the October 1st postcard, there were misspellings, wasn't quite grammatically correct, so it doesn't seem to have been the same writer.
So it was different handwriting too, wasn't it?
It was different handwriting. So a lot of people think that have investigated this, that this really was Jack the Ripper.
Well, anybody who would deliver a kidney.
Right. But it could have been a jokester, a prankster, who had a very sick sense of humor, but nothing more than that. You don't know. It's all part
of
the mystery.
Anybody who can get a hold of a human kidney,
yeah.
There's something nefarious about that.
Yes. I think that that's not your average purchase or something like that. Right. Now, by this time, by late October, there was panic and so on. Even Queen Victoria chimed in here and said that she thought that Scotland Yard wasn't doing enough work. And, you know,
oh, wow. They must have hated that.
Sir Charles Warren, the commissioner, was on the hot seat. Frederick Aberline and other detectives were doing their best to try to find who this was. And now we come to the fifth and final victim. This is Mary Jane Kelly. Mary Jane Kelly was only in her mid-20s. A number of these other women were in their early 40s or something like that. Mary Jane Kelly was only around 25, and she had gone home. This is on November 9th, and it's here that she was killed. Unlike the other four women who were found out on a street, she was killed in her own little apartment. And this is absolutely the most brutal murder of the five. I've seen the photos.
It's amazing that there's photos of these things.
The one photo, I just want to say this to our listeners. If you have children, you don't want them to see this. This is not something for children. It is the most horrible photo you can look at. I mean, she was completely disfigured facially. Her intestines were taken out. She was carved up. Skin was taken off. Both breasts were cut off.
Wasn't her nose cut off as well?
Her nose was cut off. It was just part of Catherine Eddowes' nose was cut off too. But her everything, she was totally mutilated. And the way she was discovered was there was a man who was coming to collect the rent because she was back on her rent for the little place that she lived in Whitechapel. And he knocked and nothing. And then there was a broken window. So he looked through the window and so on. And oh my God, what
oh
he saw.
Oh my God, I can't imagine.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine
looking in
being the person to discover that?
I wouldn't believe my eyes.
Right. Then, of course, he notified police and they came and photographs were taken and so on. So this is the fifth of the so-called, or the canonical five.
I wonder if the police had ever come across anything like that in all their days.
Well, there were other really brutal murders. There were the whole group of Thames torso murders where they were finding the torso without the head.
Yeah, but you're not seeing like Thames a bloodstained room.
No, this is about the most brutal a murder can be, especially the last one, Mary Jane Kelly. It was just, so this is.
It seemed he had time and he was unencumbered. And
Yes. Could just go to especially work. Because the last one, this fifth one, Mary Jane Kelly, he was inside. So he could take
that's
his
what
time.
I mean. Right.
And it seems like he burned part of her clothing in that room so he had some light so he could see how to further mutilate her.
Oh.
Right. Well, by the time the fifth murder occurred, I mean, you're talking about hysteria.
Here. Oh.
Right.
I can't even
imagine. I mean, Sir Charles Warren, the commissioner, would eventually resign because of this. Detectives were beside themselves. They couldn't find out who this was. There would be additional murders in December of 1888, in July of 1889, September of 1889, and even one in February of 1891. But these were not attributed to Jack the Ripper, even though they occurred in the Whitechapel area. This takes me to a man named Melville McNaughton. Melville McNaughton was not involved with the investigation of the Whitechapel murders.
Who was he?
He was the head of the Criminal Investigative Division of Scotland Yard, and he came in about a year after these murders and so on. What's interesting about him is in 1894, this is some 5-6 years after, because all the Jack the Ripper murders occurred in 1888, the same year, between August 31st and November 9th. He wrote a report or a monograph or a memo or whatever, in which he indicated that Jack the Ripper killed 5 women. And this kind of, and a lot of others thought it was these 5, and it wasn't the previous 2 or there was a 4 that came after. So it kind of stuck that Jack the Ripper killed 5 women. But there are individuals who disagree with that. They think that Jack the Ripper killed more than 5.
I mean, it's possible he killed more that were never discovered.
Well, that's also a possibility. There are even some who think that he killed only 3 or 4, that the Elizabeth Stride murder was not by Jack the Ripper because she only had her throat cut. That was one of the 2 on September 30th.
Okay.
But we don't know. See, this is all part of the mystery. How many murders did this particular individual commit? But generally, it's considered
5.
Yes. And the 5 we went through.
Well, and then you have to ask, why did it stop?
That's another reason. Did Jack the Ripper die? Did Jack the Ripper move? One of the many suspects, and this is the person that Fred Aberline, who was the chief constable investigating Jack the Ripper's murders, he quit the force in 1892, shortly thereafter. And in 1903, he gave a couple interviews, I think it was to Pall Mall magazine, in which he opined that he thought that Jack the Ripper was a guy named George Chapman. George Chapman was actually a Polish immigrant. His real name was Severin Kwasowski. And he had trained in medicine in Poland. He had come to England. He took the name George Chapman. He was there at the time of the 5 murders. Eventually, he would move temporarily to the United States, to New Jersey. There would be a brutal murder there in New York, right across from New Jersey.
Wasn't that on the Lower East Side?
I don't know if that was on the Lower East Side, but it was in New York City.
Okay.
And then he would come back to London. And eventually, he was accused of poisoning 3 of his wives.
Wow.
And they actually had enough evidence on the last one to find him guilty of murder and execute him. I think it's something like 1896.
Obviously, they must have questioned him.
Oh, yeah. Well, many were questioned. There were, oh, my gosh.
No, but I mean, to the effect of, are you Jack the Ripper?
Right. Many were questioned, I think he
was. I mean,
was,
I would think before you die, you would want that notoriety. If it were truly you.
Well, what's interesting is there are individuals that don't think that George Chapman was the murderer because he definitely poisoned 3 of his wives. And the theory is that you don't go from being a slasher to a poisoner. But when Fred Aberline, the former chief inspector who was now retired, was asked about this, he said, if you can watch a wife of yours die a painful death from poison, because the kind of poison he gave to them was one that created a very painful death. He said, you're capable of anything, and you could switch your style of killing. But others think that that's not the case. Melville McNaughton thought it was some other individuals. One was a Russian doctor. One was another Polish immigrant. One was an English barrister named Druitt.
Well, and then there was the whole Queen's Doctor theory as well.
Right, Sir William Gall, that he was Jack the Ripper. And in fact, the movie with Michael Caine
puts that
concludes forward. that was the Ripper, Sir William Gall, the Queen's physician. There are many who think, it's not many, but there are some who think that a painter named Walter Sickert, who didn't die until 1942, was Jack the Ripper.
I think that was the most recent one.
There have been books written on
put
that.
Forward.
Yes.
Right.
An authorist named Cornwell has written two books maintaining it was Walter Sickert, but there are many ripperologists who disagree with that. Once again, the only certainty is that there's no certainty.
And I think that's part of the intrigue, don't you?
Absolutely. Yes. I think that that is definitely the case. I think that the fact that this person was never caught, and we're not, once again, we're not absolutely certain it's five murders. Most think it was these five that I mentioned, but it could have been more, like Martha Tabram, the one that died on August 7th before the first of the five. It could have been perhaps fewer. We don't know. This is all part of the mystery of who Jack the Ripper was. Did he have medical knowledge? Did he not have medical knowledge? Doctors disagreed.
I mean, I'm sure there's DNA on the letters, on...
Yes, there is. And DNA evidence really only comes in forensically in the 1980s. But that is been... There's something called mitochondrial DNA, which many people can have in common, which doesn't distinguish... It doesn't have the distinguishing individualistic aspects that other DNA has. So that has not been definitive.
And that would be the only DNA that was available.
Well, from the stamps and whatever, yes. Uh-huh. But nothing solid has typed him. He may be a person that was never investigated, that was never even thought about. Everything I've read about Fred Aberling, who was the chief inspector in all of this, I kind of like the guy. I think he really did his best to try to find out
who it was. I mean, this must
have
haunted him probably till his dying days, I would think.
Well, he was involved in something the very next year called the Cleveland Street Incident, which was a homosexual brothel that catered to very high-class individuals. And he was kind of disgusted with the fact that he thought that some of the people there involved got off because of their connections. So he didn't stay that much longer with the force. Eventually, he retired and worked for the Pinkerton Detective Agency. He wouldn't die till 1929. He was in his late 80s when he died.
Wow.
So, I mean, his idea that it was George Chapman, the Polish immigrant, I give that probably a little more credence than any other. But there's, I mean, with everything I've studied, I don't know who it was. I have no
That'd
idea.
That'd be amazing if you did. You could become a very rich man.
I know. Yeah. I mean, and when you look at the bibliography on Jack the Ripper, it is immense.
Well, and the filmography.
Oh, yes. Many films made on Jack the Ripper.
I mean, even as recently as what the Johnny Depp one is, 2016?
I don't know when Johnny Depp did it, but yeah, it's... and then there's many documentaries on it, too.
Oh,
there's,
my gosh,
there's
hundreds.
More documentaries. That's another one. Remember, we watched a documentary where a former, I think, Scotland Yard investigator thought it was a German, Fagenbaum.
Right. He traced him back to the United States.
Right. And to Germany and so on, but... There are many that don't accept that.
I mean, there always seems to be a sticking point.
Yeah, there's always, well, yeah, it looks like it's this person, but here's the problem, okay? Like with Walter Sickert, the painter who died in 1942, some historians have pointed out that he was abroad, I think in France, when at least some of the murders occurred. Well, that's a big sticking point, if that is true.
Well, and there's also the theory about the Queen's son.
That's the one I mentioned early on,
right,
Prince
but
Albert.
He was in Scotland.
He was in Scotland at the time. And the famous ones like Winston Churchill's father, Lord Randolph Churchill.
I mean,
and
that must have just been a joke.
Charles. Well, Lord Randolph Churchill had syphilis and toward the end of his life went out of his mind.
But that doesn't make you a Jack the Ripper.
No, it doesn't. But Jack the Ripper, I think we can safely say, was not a normal human being.
We could probably safely
say
that,
I think
yes.
That's something we can indicate.
I don't think that's being necessarily cruel.
Right.
Well, yeah, then there's that whole side, the psychological side why someone would do this. What
I mean,
did
I
they
think,
get out of it?
I think the chief reason staring someone in the face is true misogyny here. this is a true hatred of women by a particular man. Now, I'm not absolutely certain of that.
It seems like he only targeted low-class women.
Yeah, all low-class, all prostitutes.
Who were hard up on their luck, who never had money to pay the rent.
Very unfortunate, no question about it.
Because it doesn't seem like he was interested in middle-class or upper-class women.
No, he functioned in the Whitechapel area, which was a pretty seedy area of London.
So I guess most people, unless you live there, unless that was your neighborhood, you probably didn't go to Whitechapel.
No, I don't think that you're middle-class and upper-class, unless you are one of the gentlemen who wanted to have a prostitute at that time. And I don't understand why anybody would do that, because syphilis existed then and a cure for syphilis didn't exist. I don't think it was would have been worth it.
Well, a lot of people don't think that far ahead.
What's interesting is that the second and the fifth murders occurred in a neighborhood of Whitechapel called Spitalfields. So if you're researching Jack the Ripper, you'll come across that term for that neighborhood of Whitechapel called Spitalfields, both of which, Whitechapel and Spitalfields, are now part of the borough of Tower Hamlets, one of 32 boroughs in Greater London.
Well, and apparently there's still tours. You can take a walking tour.
Oh my gosh, there's a museum, there's tours. It is endlessly fascinating. It'll never be exhausted. And I'm pretty sure we'll probably never find out who it was.
Well, if we don't know now with all the modern technology and forensics that we have.
One of the few certainties is Jack the Ripper has to be dead.
I would think
These were all committed in 1888.
Unless he's a vampire.
Unless he's a vampire. So who he was.
I mean, clearly he had a fascination with blood, so.
Yeah. Right. And it's interesting that you have all these witnesses saying, they'd see this gentleman who was well-dressed, but no, someone else would say, no, I saw this someone who was kind of shabby. So you see, the police were getting all this different information.
They must have been getting hundreds of tips and letters.
Oh, they had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters.
Thousands.
Yeah. I just mentioned the Dear Boss letter and the postcard of October 1st, and then the package that George Lusk got on October 16th. That was the From Hell letter. And that From Hell letter has since been lost. That's another thing, too. A lot of the information about Jack the Ripper was either destroyed during World War II, during the Blitz of London, or it was just discarded by Scotland Yard as not that important. That just was misplaced over time. So if you're studying Jack the Ripper, that's an additional problem you have. A lot of the information is permanently gone.
Wow, I didn't even think about the Blitz.
Yeah, the Blitz destroyed a lot of information about a lot of cases,
right.
but including Jack the Ripper. That's another part of the mystery.
It makes you wonder, but for that, would we know?
My guess is no, we wouldn't know. Uh-uh. And there's even theories to the effect that Jack the Ripper was an American.
Who was just visiting?
Yes, could have been. One of the theories was a man named Mudgett who took the name of Holmes. And he was born.
As in Sherlock?
Yes, in Sherlock. He was born in New Hampshire. He went to University of Michigan Medical School, ended up being a pharmacist in Chicago, eventually claimed he had 27 murders. His great-great-grandson wrote a work, I think it's called Bloodstains, in which he said that his great-great-grandfather, Mudgett, was Jack the Ripper. But that's just one more theory.
But that's been disproven as well, hasn't it?
Wouldn't go so far as to say it's been disproven, but it has certainly not been proven.
It has its issues, just like every other theory.
Right. It's interesting, the word boss in the Dear Boss letter that was received on September 27th. The first one. One of the reasons why some people think it was an American who was Jack the Ripper is the word boss was not used in England at that time, very commonly. It's very much an American term. But that in itself doesn't say too much.
Yeah, it could have been somebody trying to use an Americanism.
Yes, to throw someone off the scent, to throw them off the investigation. We don't know. See, it's just one more mystery. The more you examine the whole Jack the Ripper phenomenon, the more questions arise. And it is fascinating, I think.
And those poor women.
Oh, my God. They suffered, except Elizabeth Stride only had her throat cut. She would have died instantly, but the other four were mutilated.
Well, but the theory is they had their throat cut first.
First. So they hopefully died very quickly, and then the mutilation occurred after the death. I'm hoping that that is the case.
Right. I don't know that for sure.
I think we're pretty certain about that, yes. And numerous doctors, examined those corpses, and I think they came to that conclusion.
So he wasn't that terrible.
Oh, no, no, no.
I'm kidding.
This man was evil, but he must have been very, a number of the doctors opined that he probably had a very cool temperament, wasn't flustered easily, probably strong, relatively young, fit, and so on. But why he did what he did?
Yeah, the psychology behind it is, that's fascinating.
I mean, maybe he got syphilis from another prostitute and blamed women for that. That's one of many theories. And then he took it out on these five women, so... Who knows? Because syphilis at the time did terrible things. Yeah, I think the only treatment they had at the time was mercury, and that created lots of problems in and of itself. So eventually it would hit your central nervous system and you'd go insane. It's a terrible death.
What is the cure? Is it antibiotics?
Yeah, they have all kinds of cures for it now, although they keep getting more resilient strains and so on. I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm not going to play one here at the podcast, but there are modern treatments for gonorrhea and syphilis that did not exist in the 1880s. And did I mention that fingerprints were just coming in?
Well, you mentioned DNA was coming in around 1988, so that wasn't an option.
Right. Fingerprints, people say, well, did they have fingerprints of this? Well, the whole industry of fingerprints, which eventually would be very helpful to law enforcement, was just in its infancy in the 1880s. And Scotland Yard at that time in 1888 didn't have a collection of fingerprints and so on. So fingerprints were not involved with the investigation.
Yeah, unless you have something to compare it to, what good does a fingerprint do?
Right.
It is fascinating.
The ultimate cold case, probably the most brutal murderer who has not been caught as far as just fame goes. And that first letter, the Dear Boss letter where he signed it, Jack the Ripper, if indeed that was him, that's the name that stuck. He went by different names before that, like Leather Apron. There were different names for
that. That just doesn't quite have the same ring.
No, it doesn't. But once that Dear Boss letter was written, Jack the Ripper is the name that stuck and sticks to this day.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fascinating, and it's perfect for October, because actually this is about the time a lot of the murders were happening.
That's correct. They occurred between August 31st and November 9th, the five attributed to him. They're known as the canonical five.
Canonical five.
Yes, the ones attributed.
I would not want to be part of that exclusive group.
Oh, no, no, no. That's another thing as you study this. There's a real sadness that can enter into you.
It's horrific. And especially if you reference the photographs, it's just, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, I needed to get away at times, watch a football game, drink a beer, take a run. You just have to get away from this after a while.
Imagine if you were investigating it.
Oh, I think homicide detectives, I'm glad they exist. They do great work oftentimes. But it must get
to the psychological toll.
I think you have to compartmentalize your life, you know, your family and so on, and then your work. You can't mix the two. And I think it's very easy to say, but I think it's necessary to do that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Wow. Well, thank you for enlightening us.
Yes. All the murders in the same year, 1888.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of 31.
Yes. 32nd episode. What are we doing?
We, I think, are doing Salem Witch Trials.
Oh, yes, of 1692.
Yes, and I have a very special connection to Salem, which I'll talk about in our next episode.
Oh, I can't wait.
I know, you're just on the edge of your seat.
Yes, so I think we're about done here.
I think we are. So let's wrap it up, and we will say stay well, stay safe. Until next time.
Yep, take care.
Well, friends, here we are at the end of the podcast. Be sure to check out the links in the show description to find some of the resources we used for this episode. Also, if you've enjoyed listening, please head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a virtual high five by leaving us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. And if you'd like to connect with us directly, you can find us at historicallyspeakingpodcast.com or follow us on Instagram at historicallyspeakingpodcast. That's it for today. And again, thanks for sharing part of your day with us. And remember, if you want to know what the future holds, study the past.